I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. We are about to have another one of our Theater Baltimore conversations here on The Steiner Show. There is a play winding down in its last few days over at Center Stage called Reentry. Playwrights are Emily Ackerman and KJ Sanchez. KJ is with us here as part of our conversation. It's at the Head Theater. It's a pretty amazing play. I was there a couple of weeks back and actually led the post-play discussion with Vietnam veteran buddy of mine, Woody Curry, who runs the Baltimore Station. It was a packed house, a packed discussion. And we are joined in studio here by three of the actors, Joe Harrell, P.J. Sasko, and Sheila Tapien. Good to have you all with us. Welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having us.
Good morning.
It is Tapien,
hello.
Right?
Yes, Tapien.
Tapien.
And P.J. Sure. Sasko, but it almost went Sasko.
Sasko. Sasko's cool. I like it. Sasko. Maybe it's just where I'm from, Sasko. So, welcome. Good to have you all with us. KJ, I guess we should start with you, maybe, and talk a bit about what this play is about and the origins of it. I mean, it's this kind of power play about Marines, Marine families,
right.
Marine life. So talk about where this play came from.
Well, this play came from a very personal place. I'm the sister of five veterans who served during the Vietnam era. Two of them are combat veterans from Vietnam. And my writing partner, Emily Ackerman, has two brothers who are Marines who served multiple deployments in Iraq and Afghanistan. And she and I had been colleagues and worked together on a lot of other plays for many years. We've written plays based on interviews with real people.
Mm-hmm.
And we got together and over a beer just started to talk about what our experiences are as a sister of veterans coming home and how it impacts the family, how they change, and how to gain access and how to be part of their lives once again, and how we can help make their reentry a little bit better. So 3 years ago, we started traveling the country and interviewing veterans, and we had a couple of rules. We wanted to stay away from politics.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to make this a personal story, and so we started to ask folks, men and women of all of the different branches, what is it like to go from combat to standing in line at the grocery store? And then we share that with the audience, and our hope is that we have a level of understanding of what they're going through so that we can help them as neighbors, family, community, fellow citizens.
And this what I learned before we started this conversation from the actors in the room here is that this is a crew that has been working on this play together in a number of locations, which is also kind of a very strange phenomenon for theater, I think.
Right. Yeah, this play wanted to be born, and it wants to keep living. It started off at Two River Theater Company in Red Bank, New Jersey. That's where it was commissioned, and we did a four-week run there. And then folks from an off-Broadway theater saw it and wanted to bring us to off-Broadway, so we ran there last spring. Folks from Center Stage heard word of that production, read the script, brought us to Center Stage, and it looks like the play will continue to have a national tour, a life next year. We're going to be going to a lot of other theaters. Hmm. And we've also been embraced by the military community, and we've been performing on bases. We just did a concert reading of the play at Quantico, and we're going to the Marine Corps Recruit Depot of Parris Island in February. So it's the play that just keeps on marching.
Hoorah!
So now, and all of you in this room have been in this company with this little kind of theater piece since the beginning?
Yeah.
3 years ago.
So did you, when you auditioned for this, did you think you were signing up?
No idea.
Reading up for over and over again.
We thought we were just doing a workshop, just like a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. We thought it'd be fun to, there was going to be a boot camp involved. We knew it was, and I love that kind of stuff, the sort of physical nature of it. So I was like, yeah, great, bring
you
it.
You went to a boot camp?
Joe, who's in house with us right now, he ran a boot camp for us and made it just like, we would have, PT for about two and a half hours every day to start our rehearsal. And it was great. He ran
Joe
us through.
Joe is a former Marine Corps drill instructor. And so he initially came into the project as our military advisor, but I learned very quickly that he's an amazing actor and cast him in as the commanding officer in the show. So he both is performing in the play, and early on he took us all through our paces so that we could get a little taste of what it was like to be a Marine Corps recruit.
So do you have any
right,
sense?
Joe?
Well, that's exactly correct, KJ.
So did you have expectations?
And when he trained us, when I handed over the reins to Joe, I was a nasty recruit like everybody else. And
oh, yeah.
I have fond memories of one morning in the parking lot of Two River Theater Company, Joe Harrell, who I had just hired to be in our show, called me a dirtbag, I believe. Was that the precise word, Joe?
I think it might have been a little worse than that. That was the PG version you just gave for radio. No, it was a great experience. They didn't think that they were enlisting or signing up for this deployment, but honestly, I knew what they were getting into when they came into it.
Yeah.
I knew it was going to have to be required.
So did you expect that you were going to end up being an actor in this play when you started this off? Did you have that thought, desire?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That was absolutely a thought and a desire, and that was my first goal.
Uh-huh.
So
he came in wanting it more than anybody else, and that was clear.
Hey, now.
Hey.
Settle it down.
No. I mean,
right here.
No. I mean, of all of the actors who auditioned that role.
Yes, of course.
It was clear that all of you, actually, Mark, when I did auditions, they not only had to read the parts, but we did, I guess, about 20 minutes of
hardcore,
it was more like 40 minutes,
yeah,
KJ.
Hardcore core stuff. You know, you go in and usually you just do a monologue, and they're like, yes, great, wonderful, thank you, goodbye. She's like, okay, now, it was like suddenly we were in, a warrior
circle. I made them do push-ups and jumping jacks and run and basically physically work them really, really hard. And so the cast I got, out of the auditioning hundreds of people, these were the five actors that had the most generosity of spirit, worked the hardest, wanted it the most, and were pretty courageous.
So that's what you were looking for, to see who got pissy whenever you did those exercises.
Who started to whine like a... Yeah.
I remember someone in my group was really upset, you know, because he didn't expect it. He thought he was going to go in there and work and act and do monologues, and that's the last thing we did. And I remember you, KJ, I don't know who it was, but you kind of telling him, okay, you know, just breathe through this. Come on, it's going to be okay. And he was just like, no, this is awful.
Why did you do that? I mean, why was that the process?
Because we learned spending time with service members that it ain't about you. That it's about teamwork. It's about believing in something bigger than yourself.
Uh-huh.
And so I needed to put the actors through paces to see how they handled that. If an actor was, you know, that's not, you know, if they drew a line in the sand and said, this is how much I will do and this is what I won't do, that's not the kind of spirit that I wanted to work with. So not only were these guys strong, but I also watched them taking care of each other. I remember there was a moment where PJ reached out and patted another actor on the back who was breathing hard and having a hard time, and it was like supporting him. Here they're competing for the same part, but PJ reached out with a gesture of support for a fellow actor, and I saw that and thought, those are the kind of performers I want to work with.
And
for those
that's
listening,
sweet,
the reason, you know, it was very important to us that the actors be very, very authentic, be very, very true, because we learned from the community that they're suspicious of a play, a movie, anything that is purporting to represent them. And they should be suspicious because they're not often well represented. So we wanted to be as authentic as possible to the true ethos of the military community.
This is Stanislavski with a Marine haircut.
Yeah.
So when you put people through their paces to do this, Joe, we're talking about when you did that. I mean, how real was it?
It was very real. And no, I'm not going to mention the one actor who cried. So I know they're worrying about it right now, and I won't do that today. But I will say that it was very intense to a point to where I actually made myself dry heave because of the running and the sprinting and the tough work that we were doing. You know, evacuation drills, you know, casualty drills, all these different types of carries and fireman carry and all those things whenever you do have an injury. I put them through everything that a recruit would go through minus learning how to qualify with a rifle.
Minus that.
Right, and minus handling an actual weapon. up until about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, Bobby and I got right. taken by a friend of ours who has also subbed in for the show because I was shooting a film when we first came here to rehearse, and so he subbed in for me. He was kind enough to do it. He's been close to the project for a long time. He took Bobby and me to go shoot some 45s, like about 45 minutes away, which was very – I'd never shot a pistol before. It's really exciting.
That's wild. So this when you did the piece in the play, when Vi and I were watching, you walked out at the end – towards the end of the play in a uniform. That was your uniform?
No, that was bought and made by the actual costume shop at the theater. They did a wonderful job, too, actually.
They did, that's why.
They nailed it. They nailed the uniform.
Yeah.
Minus one thing that only a Marine can do, but as far as everything else is concerned, it was outstanding. So.
That's interesting. I was watching. I said, we looked at him. I said, is that real? It looked really
real. Oh, it is. It's to the T.
Yeah.
But, Joe, you used to use your own uniform in the other two productions,
yes,
right?
Yes, I did. And what was happening, and they had to keep giving me a certain amount of money to rent my uniform through the union rules.
Oh, right. Union rules, right.
Right. So, fortunately for us, KJ, you know, worked out a great deal with Center Stage, and they were able to purchase a uniform for this show specifically.
Very cool.
So, and then tailored it to a T. I ran into somebody who works in the costume shop who's gotten a couple of compliments from Marines who she ran into at a bar who had seen the show, and they were so impressed with how beautifully the uniform was tailored.
Yep, she told me that story. She knows how to get rid of duck butt.
What she told me. What is duck butt?
Duck butt is when the actual blouse of the dress blues, it pokes out too far past the butt,
right.
And it makes it look like the person has a duck tail. But she actually was able to get rid of that, her and Eddie, I believe. It was great.
That's awesome.
That's very interesting. So this time I had this play was done, and I don't know if you all want to do any of this, and if you don't, that's cool. If you can't, that's all right as well, but... do any of the pieces of the play that you were in to give our listeners just a sense of what they'll find when they hit the theater this weekend?
I don't know.
Truth.
Yeah, what they're gonna hear? Oh man, they're gonna. You mean you want to hear the actual words?
If you can, and if not, you know, I don't want to put you all in a bind or spot. Just hit me. That might be an interesting thing to have people listening, because it was pretty powerful to hear whether it was your monologues, Joe, or the
KJ.
Yeah, feel free to do any. I mean, the first thing I will say
I
is
can't
that
say anything from John.
we didn't make up any of the dialogue. We took the dialogue directly from transcripts of interviews.
Right.
And the way that the play is presented to the audience, well, first of all, the listeners have been hearing us joking, and we have a rather irreverent sense of humor that's from the material in the play, even though the issue is very serious. There's a great deal of profundity and heartache and heartbreak in the play. The Marines that we interviewed, men and women alike, have a miraculous sense of humor. It was explained to me that from the high-ranking officer that humor breaks up the panic cycle, and that has really informed how we interact with each other. So there's a lot of joking. So the play is actually surprisingly funny at moments, I think. But also, like I said, it came directly from these interviews, so we didn't make any of it up. But one example is Sheila plays a role, a character named Suzanne, and she is the former wife of a Marine.
Yes.
And she has this amazing sense of humor, yet, as you'll hear, if Sheila, you wouldn't mind doing the monologue, you'll hear that there's a great deal of profundity behind the humor.
Wow.
Do it.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, we can take a breath all the way.
Yeah, let me just give you a second here.
I said you were prepared to
I wasn't
do.
Expecting this. All right.
That's cool.
Well, when they get back, we have post-deployment briefs about what to expect. And they get all the wives together, and they're like, okay, when they get back, they're going to be jumpy. They're going to need time to adjust. Be careful about throwing a party. You know, maybe don't have too many people around at first. The noises that kids make might upset them. Now, the first two times he came back, I understood it fine. I made sure that I sent him a picture of my new haircut, and I made sure that the house looked the same as when he left, because surprises are not a good thing when they come back. And, you know, I would wake him up really gently, like, you know, Jess, wake up. And I would make noises in my sleep so he would know that I was there. But one of the last times, I just wasn't thinking, and my father and uncle were both Marines. I come from a military family. But so this one night, Jess had already gone to sleep, and I was up, and I was messing around on the computer. And I wanted to tell Jess something, and I went into the room and jumped on the bed, and I was like, Jess! And he turned around, and he was like, shoo, like latched onto my neck and, like, started throttling me. And he's completely asleep, and I'm like, oh, and I'm, like, grabbing his arm, you know, and I'm like, baby, baby, please, please, it's me, I'm sorry. And he woke up, and he was like, oh, my God, I am so sorry, I am so sorry, are you okay, are you okay? And I was like, it is not your fault, it's not your fault, it's my fault, I forgot. You know, I'm so sorry, baby, I'm so sorry. Like, I just forgot. And it, because I had been so detached from it this time, you know, because I had been through it so many times already, and I was like, whatever. That was definitely interesting. No, we're not together now. Actually, our divorce was final a few months ago. A lot of reasons, but one of the main ones was that after he got back from his fourth deployment, he didn't want kids anymore. I catch a lot of from my friends for dating only military guys. But honestly, I don't know how to relate to other people. I mean, I spent 7 years of the Marine Corps being my life. It was everything. And I was a good Marine Corps wife. And I don't know. I guess I just always knew that I would marry someone who had been in the military because I thought that it shows selflessness. Like, there's this guy that I work with, Mike. And I'm like, dude, you're able-bodied. What the fuck are you doing? Why didn't you join the military? Why aren't you serving the country? Oh, you work at the bank? Yay. I don't know. That was so weird.
Such a good job, Sheila. That was excellent. Sheila.
And that was an amazing part. That really hit me. One of the things that hit me about, I thought about as you were doing this.
Nice, baby.
Sheila, just that one piece, is that all the pieces you did, the way everyone in this small company acted, was very real. It wasn't, in other words, it didn't come off like drama as an actor. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it came off...
Yeah, very natural, right?
Very natural. The cadence, the people were real. I think it was not... No, it wasn't your role. It was Bobby's role. Mm-hmm. I think when he played the guy who was the partner of his other character. Did I have that right?
Yeah, Tommy.
Tommy.
Tommy, yeah, sure.
And even the way he switched his accent where this other brother came from. I mean, and it was just the whole. It was just real. I mean, it was like, you know, you turn around, and you knew these people.
Yeah,
you know,
that's great.
I knew that. I knew that.
And you know, Mark, they've performed these parts in front of the very people they're representing.
Really.
The other night, one of the characters that Samira plays in the bar, Lisa, she's a captain, and she talks about being a convoy commander.
Right.
And that night, the real Lisa was in the audience. Got to see herself portrayed on stage.
Here in Baltimore?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
Wow. So, well, how was that? How did she react to seeing herself on stage?
She loved it. She loved it a lot. And she was really good friends with the character that PJ plays, John. And she sent us a message and said it just reminded her how much she misses that real person. And she was just very honored and really loved it. Over the course of the 3 years when we've performed and I've watched these guys perform in front of military audiences, and then after the show, there's inevitably each actor has a line of people in front of them wanting to talk to them, tell them their own stories. We had a mom who said, you know, my son was severely injured, and the mom and the character I felt like was a representative of what I'm going through. And so they've shared a lot of their stories with you guys, haven't they, Joe, PJ, and Sheila, to come up and talk to you? And I think that's been part of your process of getting to this point of what Mark is talking about, that your performances are so natural because you've been so embedded with the real people.
We have been embedded. And they do. They unload. It's amazing. Because ultimately, I mean, besides Joe, we're civilians. You know, but we've done our job well enough that they feel comfortable talking to us. And we've done it at a PTSD conference out in San Diego. I've been there for like 1,000 Marines and therapists. And from that, like the Sergeant Major from Quantico was there, and he invited us then to come do it at Quantico. And the response has just been, I mean, you know, we had a little talk back that started at the end of this performance out in San Diego, and there was a mother who came to the mic, and she had lost her two sons. Mm. And she felt like she'd spent... the last 2 hours with him, and she was thanking us for bringing. I mean, I just leaped off the stage and ran down there and gave her a hug, and then the whole place is like, ooh-ah! You know, I mean, it's there's so much rawness, and there's so much good beyond just a play that this thing can do. It's
well, and none of this would be possible without the generosity of the people that we talked to. They took personal risk to share their stories with us, and really opened up. And I think that Joe, if you wouldn't mind doing the first CO when he's in private, starting with, "Hey, no, this is good. I do those lectures." We met a commanding officer who does lectures at conferences for Marine parents. And he feels that it's very important to be really, really honest with the parents of the men and women serving under him so that they understand what they go through to prepare to go to combat, so that they can better understand who they are when they come back from combat. So as he says to these parents, "I'm not going to pull any punches. I am going to give you, I'm going to describe for you exactly what we go through and how we prepare to go into combat." Then later on in the play, we meet him. The first time we meet him is in a public forum. He's talking to these parents. And then later in the play, we meet him in a private forum where he's talking to us about why he does these lectures. And this is his answer for why does he do these lectures to parents of his men and women.
"I do these lectures, well, because I think people need to know the whole piece of it, but I want them to know there's actual thought, there's rigor, intellectual rigor that goes into this. It's not just the Hollywood chest-thumping, follow me, but we are very, very methodical. We are very emotionally disciplined, and guys pride on that poise. When I do these conferences, when I talk to these parents, you see their level of commitment, and you see the hope in their eyes when you talk about what you're doing with their sons and daughters. And you really, that's when you feel a weight. I remember just having knots in my stomach, you know, watching my guys. I mean, you're with them too, but watching your guys go into the fight and just knots in your stomach going, oh, go faster, dodge a little lower. It's like sometimes like being a parent at a little league soccer game and your inner monologue going, you're hoping you won't see him go down. And when you see one of your guys go down, you watch men die doing what you told them to do. I can't say it's all on me. Their deaths, that would be disingenuous. And they're grown men. They knew what they were getting into. But that said, I think if you're doing it right, it ought to bother you. I mean, you look these guys in the eyes, and you see all this belief in you and what you're telling them to do. When you take your dog, you know, to hunt, and he's looking at you, You're going to take me to the right place, and you're going to ask me to do the right thing, and I'm going to knock myself out trying to please you. It's that same look. And you can see the faces of their families behind them with exactly the opposite look, this hope mixed with fear and dread."
Nice, Joe. That's beautiful. So we cast the audience as the interviewer. So the audience doesn't participate, they sit there, but the actors are talking to them as if they are interviewing them. And that's the convention of the play. I've been racking my brain thinking about a monologue that PJ can do.
They don't have to spend an hour and a half bleeping every word, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. We chose particular people to follow in the play, to put in the play, because, you know, we didn't want to say that this is everybody's experience. That's the danger of the play, is that somebody might think that we're saying that everybody who comes back from combat has the same issues, and they don't. But we wanted to follow these particular people because they represented, they were sort of iconic and represented groups of people in some ways. And so the part, John, that PJ plays, is a captain, a fierce wit and intelligence, dry sense of humor, and he just has this capacity to cut anybody off at the knees and just sort of lay things out in a way that's really remarkable. So, PJ, if you I never fit in on the outside. That's why I went back in.
Yeah.
But if you do have one of those bleepable words, try effin'.
Can you just bleep?
You know, I met a retired Marine Corps general.
I'll try.
Sworn in his life.
You could say
he's
freaking,
never
right?
Sworn in his life, but instead of saying the F word, he says flippin'. So he says this flippin' thing and that flippin' thing, and that's how he gets away with it. So if you want to replace it or just
go
jump
flip
those
yourself
words.
There, Cage.
Exactly. So this is somebody who we learned earlier in the play. First was a Marine, an enlisted Marine. Then he got out of the Marine Corps, and now he's an officer. And we ask him about this.
Which one did you want me to do, Cage? The one up at the locker?
I never fit on the outside.
Yeah, I never felt like I fit in on the outside. That's why I went back in and became an officer after I got out of the Marine Corps when I was in the first time. I worked for a funeral home. People are flipping stupid. That's why I couldn't handle it. Not the death. That's no big deal. That doesn't bother me at all. Never did. It's the worthless trash you have to deal with. You know, Grandpa died and the whole family's screaming at each other. He only died a few days ago, but Grandma is already shacking up with someone else. The worthless kids are fighting over money and grandkids just want a nice funeral for him. I remember one time, the fireman died and there was a flipping parade for him because it was after 9/11. But the thing is, he didn't die fighting a fire or rescuing anybody. He died on his goddamn day off crashing a snowmobile into a tree. And I have to go to a parade mile long because everyone has a hard on for firemen. But then, an hour or so later, I have to go pick up a dead 4-year-old. No one is throwing a parade for him. So, what the f***?
What the bleep? Yeah, it's really hard to find a monologue for John that doesn't involve lots of swear words.
It's all right. Our listeners are just hearing bleeps, which is okay. Because one of the things I want people who listen to this today to understand a couple of things. One is that the performance and the experience is not depressing, but it's intense.
Yeah, it's real.
And it's real. So that's something that I think that you get from small pieces you all throw out from the play. I mean, I think that, the idea that we as a country, as a culture, are just now beginning to wrestle with what happens when you come home from war. I mean, it really started because it was like hidden in World War II completely. My dad, completely hidden.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
my dad too.
My generation in Vietnam, all of a sudden you come back and people are beginning to be aware because you're forcing them to be aware in a way that they weren't forced before to be aware. And so all things, this thing has exploded and now it's really become something. We've been doing a series of programs around the other side of this, which is that not just guys coming, men and women coming back with post-traumatic stress disorder, but there are 25,000, this is a real digression, but it just popped my head thinking about y'all, there's 25,000 men and women who have come back from Iraq and Afghanistan who've been not denied benefits because they were told they had pre-existing conditions. Even though they've been hit by mortar or they've been whatever happened to them, and men and women. Yeah. And so this is a huge, we've been following this a lot. We've had some effect in getting Congress to do something and have hearings and to kind of turn this around. And so, I mean, so this thing is now becoming something that people want to hear and they have to kind of wrestle with, and I think it's important. I mean, I can tell from KJ, from just the way you were directing the actors in this room long distance from New York I can hear you directing this piece because you directed this play as well as wrote it here, and you have a passion for this. I mean, this is not just something you decided to go interview and direct, but this whole idea, this whole concept of reentry in this play is like a visceral passion for you, it sounds like.
It has. I'm like a dog with a bone, and it is you. It's remarkable that I am still directing them, even though I'm hundreds of miles away.
But, no, we expect it, honey.
Yeah, but you know, it's a drop in the bucket compared to the kind of commitment that service members are asked to provide. Yeah. I mean, me, you know, devoting a couple of hours a day to keeping this work alive is nothing when you spend a moment with somebody who sleeps under a truck, who doesn't know, you know, at any moment how safe they are or not, and also who just shows up to work every day and has decided to, you know, serve their country. And national service in any way, I would say. I mean, I just have, this project has really helped me fall in love with the concept of national service. And I consider theater artists, I consider that a national service as well. But anything where people are working towards a larger common good or showing up because you're taking care of the person to your left and your right. And so it's easy for me to have a lot of passion for this because I have so much respect for the people who are serving and who have served previously. So
now tomorrow night, on Thursday night, the performance is going to be simulcast around the country, I understand, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
An NEH grant or an NEA grant, if you somebody told me it was.
Yeah.
That will be seen by service folk all over the servicemen.
Yeah,
all over
it
the
will.
Country.
It's being a little controlled because we didn't want to just sort of show it to everybody at all because the Actors Union rightfully protects the actors' performances, but we're doing live streaming to particular locations. So members at Kemp Pendleton are watching it. There's a special viewing at the Pentagon.
Oh, nice.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
it's going to be pretty exciting. And I believe that there's a group from the Australian Defense Force that are going to be watching it in Australia.
Wow.
How cool is that?
That's very cool.
Oh,
That's good.
I mean, so, you know, KJ's been like our... It's funny because we started to name everybody in the company, or some of us have. And, like, KJ's like RCO. And, like, you know, Joe's artillery... Sheila's the sniper, I'm the gunny, Bobby's recon, and Samir's intel. So we have a whole company amongst ourselves that we've named. I mean, it's been, you know, she's been so important to help us stay on point and to put the right message out there and to not indulge and... Because as an actor, there's lots of traps in this stuff to overpump it or to over. And these guys don't do it.
Yep.
You know, they don't mull around in their own stuff. They just move on, you know. And it's been a great process.
Well, this is I want to encourage everyone to see this play. This is a play that I often encourage you to see the plays that are out there, but this one I'm encouraging you to see and not to miss. On its last weekend here in Baltimore, Maryland, at Center Stage, re-entry is just... a powerful performance. It's realistic. It's there. It's an incredibly lovely, minimalist set. Characters playing different characters. It's about the men and women who serve and the families around them. If you're a Marine, you have a Marine family. And it's about post-traumatic stress, and it's about the pain and love and power and passion of anybody who served. And I think that it's also just an artistic triumph, I think, the way it was staged and directed as well. And from the real voices of real men and women who have lived through this, and re-entry, and at the what is the box office number is 410-332-0033, 410-332-0033, and I want to encourage everyone to go out and see this on this last weekend. And
Mark, thanks to support from the National Endowment for the Arts, the tickets for military folks, either veterans or active duty, and their families. Are only $10, so a $45 ticket will cost them only $10.
Great. This has been wonderful. It's good to meet you by phone, KJ.
Yeah.
Hope
and,
that our paths really cross.
And a big shout-out to Baltimore Center Stage, who brought us in and did a wonderful job realizing this production and supporting us in every way that we could have asked for.
I'm glad to see that fantastic. Our premier regional theater here in town is actually doing this. Joe Harrell, good to meet you. Good
you
to
too,
have
you. Sir.
Really good to meet you, man. And PJ Sosco. Get that right. And Sheila Tapia, good to meet you as well.
Likewise.
Thanks a lot for
having us.
For
having us.
Yeah. See y'all.
Take care.
Thank
Bye.
You. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders Center, providing clinical research trials that evaluate new therapies and the latest treatment options, including surgical intervention for advancing stages of disease. The number for more information is 1-800-492-5538. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information, www.mecu.com.